Welcome to Talking Stack, MarTech Advisor's weekly news podcast. Join us as MarTech experts David Robb, Anand Talker, and editor Chitra Iyer talk about the things that mattered this week in MarTech.
And today we have a super interesting discussion planned with Gary Laban, who is the CEO of Dynata, which is a first-party data and insights platform. Now, Gary himself has over 3 decades of experience in the industry, and we're obviously going to be talking to him about how it's evolved, especially data-driven market in the data-driven marketing context. But Dynata is interesting too because they have this robust first-party data offering, which is based on research. Now, you hear a lot about quantitative first-party data, but I'm really interested to learn more from Gary if there's such a thing as qualitative first-party data as well, and you know how a company like Dynata can help marketers actually build more voice of customer into their data-driven marketing. And we hear a lot about unstructured data, voice of customer. So let's talk to Gary more about that, but let me start with Gary welcoming you to the show.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Great. And then, of course, we have Anand and David as well who are joining us today. So welcome, Anand and David, as well to the show. So let me kick it off by, first of all, Gary, giving you a little bit of a minute to tell us about yourself, what Dynata does, and what is permission first-party data exactly?
Sure. So thanks. And as you said, I've been sort of in the data-driven marketing business for many years, maybe several years, and really started more on the marketing side. Most recently, the primary focus of Dynata's business is to fuel market research, which after that, if you will, goes on to really drive activities throughout the marketing ecosystem. We do that with, as you referenced, one of the largest compilations of first-party data that exists in the world, and it's simply data gathered directly from and about an individual. That really is the definition of first-party data. It includes identity, self-reported data, attribute data, behavioral data, and more. What drives our business is that we acquire that data and in a permission-based form, and so it refers to the fact that it's gathered and provided by and with the individual's consent. And this compendium, if you will, of individuals all around the world, about 65 million of them, represents our primary asset, if you will, that fuels all of the deliverables that we create. People think about this data as sort of fueling market research, but the best results are where this very data fuels and informs every step of the marketing process. So first, it starts with understanding consumers' interests and behaviors and activities as a way of really driving the very basics of market research, and maybe even kind of going back to sort of the very basics, the 5 P's, right? What products people companies should offer, how should they be priced, what promotions work best, what placements should be used, that refers to sort of service and delivery options. And finally, what purpose does the company stand for? And that includes brand research. But these P's, if you will, go on to really drive the advertising levers, which are around sort of what creative treatments might work, what reach and frequency works, what channels, what advertising and advertising medium channels would work, and ultimately, what audiences would respond to these strategies. And our data not only drives all of that, but the last piece, the audience, we actually can we create the audiences for our clients to ultimately reach once they've done all of that research, if you will, across that spectrum.
One of the issues that we run into a lot that we're sort of pondering with first-party data is, first-party data is going to replace your third-party data because third-party data is becoming so inaccessible. But third-party data is about people who are not your customers, and first-party data for most of us is about people who are our customers. So I can't do acquisition with first-party data unless it's someone else's first-party data, which is exactly what's going on here. Dynata is running surveys and getting people to fill them out and consent and give permission to say, okay, I'm going to fill out this survey, and now you are my Dynata's first-party relationship. And then the question is, how can I, as a marketer, get access to that audience who are not my customers and promote to them so they become my customers?
So if I may, that's a great point. And so much of our work, David, is done where we work with our clients using our first-party data to reach a combination of not only their customers, but individuals who are not their customers. So many, many, many of our studies are driven off the fact that it's our intent to reach out into our member population, find folks who are using one of our clients' products and or services, but find the equal and opposite, if you will, of individuals who are not, and to use our methodologies to understand the customers, if you will, their customers, and ultimately to understand what the bridge is between those who are customers and those who at the moment choose not to be. And that drives the strategies for our clients around how they communicate and ultimately activate with that prospect universe, if you will.
So you are kind of bridging the gap between the people who are already my own customers, who I know quite well, obviously, and the people who are out there in the world who are not my customers, but because you have this first-party data relationship, you can profile the people, say, okay, here's people who are your customers, here's what they look like, here are other folks who are like them, and now that gives you a broader profile because your own customers are a very narrow subset of the universe in most cases. So now we can use that to guide acquisition outside of your universe to where my advertising should go and what the attitudes are of the people and all the things that I need to know to prospect effectively. So it's an interesting bridge.
So when a marketer doesn't have that access to first party data, we are that missing link. We provide the access literally to their own customers. In an ecosystem where we can simultaneously provide the same type of access and insight to individuals who are not their customers and figure out what bridge is required to get to the prospects, if you will, and turn them into loyalists.
I want to understand a little bit about the evolution here as a research company. How has the technology evolved when it comes to research, and how are you doing this much more efficiently and reliably than was being done before?
Thanks for that question, because I would say there's nothing less than sort of the democratization of market research. You described it very well. The largest consumer-facing brands were typically the only ones who did it at scale. And today, with the advent of technology, all brands of any shape and size can really take advantage of using our products and services, market research, to drive ultimately any of their marketing activities. And the reason for that is that it has gone from sort of a more analog-based process over decades to a much more, if you will, digital and technology-facing process. First and foremost, the industry has migrated to even a DIY methodology, and so the tools which we're able to provide to marketers and to brands are those which they can consume on their on their own time, on their own platform. Our clients can, in the context of the last few minutes in which we've been speaking for, could have set up a market research program, identified an audience that they wanted to reach, designed and deployed a survey, and could have already collected the results across hundreds of consumers in the span of the few minutes that we've been talking, and pop that into another one of our solutions to analyze and quantify the results. Heretofore, that would have taken, frankly, weeks or months, if you will, in sort of the analog world. And so the ability for that to be available allows so many different brands, even companies, you know, that are on Kickstarter, for example, that are sort of setting up their ideas in a garage. They can also tap into, if you will, real market research practices at a very achievable cost for them to help drive those activities, which heretofore, again, only the largest B2C marketers could ever really take advantage of that. And so that continues to be, that revolution continues. So not dissimilarly to sort of the advertising space, where programmatic access to the buying and placement of advertising, that programmatic technology now exists in market research. So the identifying and assembling of certain types of audiences can all be done automatically, and even today, companies like ours and others have built end-to-end platforms that allow all of this to be accessed on a single platform from start to finish. So your market research can be done literally in the cloud, end-to-end, and that allows really the changing nature of the business.
You talk about democratization, and the flip side of that is marketers having the skills to use the technologies and the resources that you're providing. And that's an old person question, of course. All these kids today, they don't know what they're doing, right? But
everyone's a market research expert now.
Everyone's a market research expert. So how do you deal with that? Because you have clients who can clearly make mistakes, or at least what you know traditional researchers would call mistakes. And maybe those clients don't think they're mistakes. And who knows? Maybe they're not even mistakes. But we would argue that most of us would argue that they were. So how do you deal with that from both sides? From imposing sort of the old standards and kind of letting go and saying, hey, you know what? Maybe the other way you're doing it works for you. You be you.
Right. So we have a number of any of the products I mentioned have, if you will, guardrails. We try to keep our clients from either, quote unquote, making a mistake or, you know, doing something that's not permissible, even or illegal for that matter. So we have those guardrails in place to drive our DIY platforms. But the other thing that's important is any of our platforms have both a do-it-for-me capability, so that we can provide the service layer, or what's becoming more and more common is a do-it-together methodology. So we access our clients' work, if you will, alongside of them, and we can sit with them and provide sort of, as we believe to be, best practices around the things that they're trying to accomplish. And so today, the heavy service layer that might be there for certain clients can gradually become a, if you will, where we just do it all to a do-it-together and ultimately a do-it-yourself.
I see this all the time where they may have the best algorithms in the world, but they start with the wrong questions. Or it's like giving keys to, you know, to a really, you know, amazing car, but they don't really know how to drive at that particular speed. Or, you know, sometimes you'll see where a lot of these machine learnings are doing these lookalike algorithms, but unfortunately, or even linear regression to understand how, you know, relationships are built. But if you don't have the capabilities to even act on them, then what's the point?
The beauty of this space is, Dynata and all of its competitors and companies in the space will have, you know, continued business opportunity because the gap to human understanding remains so large. You know, until we can sort of predict what consumers will do, there's so much work that we still have to do to, you know, to kind of close that gap, if you will, and to understand the consumer and her beliefs and interests and ideas. And, you know, as we talk about the various data points and the ways in which we can, you know, ask the right questions and collect the right data, it's really about sort of the combination of these methodologies and capabilities. No one methodology on its own, if you will, is often sufficient in trying to close that gap to complete and total human, you know, understanding.
We are getting to a point where some of the most sophisticated brands or marketing leaders are actually leveraging real-time data that's coming through, which means that you may ask the same question twice in two different time frames and you might get different answers. And it's a comfort that you have to, you know, you kind of have to arrive at. And, you know, Gary, you've been in this for 30 years. There's an instinct that you develop over time, no matter how much things change. And that's how you better understanding yourself and understanding how you leverage those data capabilities and those intelligence capabilities has to meld with those advanced, types of options that are available to you. So it's really a balance, like this human machine. I mean, I know we're getting a little philosophical, but it's true for marketing as well, because we're talking about humans trying to sell to other humans. I mean, this is we're always changing. We're always evolving.
Right. So let me, you know, guide that. So there's the philosophical aspect to it, of course, but guiding it back to the practical, reality for a marketer. David, maybe you can walk us through, being the CDP expert in the group here. Okay. You have all these data. Like I mentioned before, we all know there's a deluge of data. So there's data coming off from your social media. Now there's research added. You can get all this wonderful permission, first party insight. What's the funnel into which all of this data and insight is going to go so that the marketer can actually use this and activate it to run marketing campaigns?
In terms of funnel, certainly we would hope that the CDP was sort of where it all comes together, right? I mean, you have all the trick is you have all the data coming in. Some of the data is beautifully structured. They took a survey, they answered the survey. That's really easy to deal with, at least at a technical level. Understanding it's another question, but getting it in. Am I looking at social media posts and having to have some sort of a natural language understanding AI system that looks at that and understands the sentiment and the relationships? And, you know, there's a whole lot of processing between what someone says or writes and making that into something that's usefully structured for analysis. But you have to go through that. And that is usually going to be today a specialist, AI system of some sort to do that analysis. So that's part of that sort of narrowing of the funnel to getting it into the one place. And then you have to collate that and do the identity resolution. It says, oh, you know, this is actually this person over here who did this post is really the same person who filled out this survey and who bought these products. And we have all the different identifiers to pull together. Then the question is, okay, now I have it all in one place and it's all sort of cleaned up and analyzable, if that's a word. Now what do I do with it? So now what other tools do I apply to look for patterns and to ask questions about hypotheses and see what's true and not true? And again, that's another set of both human skills and technologies, and I think everyone here would argue that you need a mix of both. And then once we have all these brilliant insights, now what do I do with these brilliant insights? How to convert them into marketing programs of some sort that actually take advantage of those insights, which is yet another set of tools and skills. So it's, you know, there's a lot of tools and there's a lot of skills involved here. And it's not a simple, oh, push a button and out of the other end pop some revenue, right? And I think that one of the things I was just sort of thinking back to being philosophical is, we sometimes, I think, overestimate what's possible here. So my question to the assembled wizards is, what are the limits? When do we say, yes, there's real-time data and sentiment is changing constantly. Well, we can't react to that. You know, let there's some things that are epiphenomenal, if you want to really get philosophical about it, that, just change too often. What are the more basic things that don't change that we can actually deal with and expect to have useful reaction? Because you can react to everything, but then you're just bouncing all over the place and you're probably not being terribly effective. There's a question in there someplace.
I think you're just asking like, what are we capable of doing, right? And I think that question leads to, I hate to say it, another question, which is, do you understand yourself? Do you understand your capabilities?
I think David also referenced sort of, I think in his explanation, which I think was very good, around sort of the technical aspects, if you will, or at least touched on some of the technical aspects of how to bring this together. If I were to approach it maybe from sort of the data aspect, I think what's important and growing in importance today is a lot of these platforms and the technology has been focused where some of, I'll say, the larger expenditures occur, which is in sort of the marketing area, the media, the advertising, the CRM activities, and these platforms, whether they're marketing clouds or CDPs or whatever appellation you want to use, have really contained sort of the marketing activities. And what I, you know, have seen, and where I think we are going, I think, in great success, is to include that market research component within these ecosystems and join it up seamlessly, so that it not only can inform the activities, if you will, in real time, but serve the basis, if you will, the data can be the basis for the actions. And so when you keep that data layer consistent throughout these components, from, if I make it simple, from market research to sort of activation and CRM, if the data layer that drives that is sort of the same, it reduces one more, you know, one less piece of noise, if you will, in the system, because the data is consistent. I think that's a very valuable aspect of where this technology is allowing us to go going forward.
For me, one of the biggest takeaways from this conversation was really for, as a marketer, to start relooking or rethinking about how you are integrating quantitative and qualitative data, and at every point through that whole journey that you're trying to plan for and deliver the experience to. So that's been really interesting. And as we start wrapping up this conversation, I just wanted to go around the room and just, you know, starting with Gary, because I know David mentioned skills at some point where that question was somewhere in there. So, you know, Gary, what have you observed in terms of how are marketing teams going to change in terms of skills and composition as they start dealing with all these different facets of data in their quest to be data-driven? And what is data-driven marketing, in your opinion, going to look like in 2020 and beyond?
I think that the future really is where today we're still searching for sort of solutions that are customer that reflect customer intimacy and understanding and really learning and knowing more about the customer. I think the future of this is really about customer primacy and really getting to true customer centricity. So while I said earlier that we are, you know, I don't know that we'll ever close the gap of complete and total customer, if you will, understanding, I think on that journey, though, is moving from sort of intimacy to primacy and centricity, and we will begin to use technology and capabilities and coming up with new ones that allow us to really understand the consumer better, and begin to prioritize business and services and products.
It's really easy for us to overestimate what we can do. And Gary's been talking about, you know, closing that knowledge, perfect understanding. I don't understand my dog. I don't understand my wife. I sure as hell don't understand my customers. And to think that I'm going to ever, you know, perfectly understand, or just even closing the gap, as Gary, I think, is a little closer to that. Even that's a pretty ambitious thing. And again, at what point do I say, you know, this is as good as it's going to get. Let me put my energy in some other direction. And recognize the limits to my understanding. Great customer experience and personalization are not the same thing. If there's one thing that I do want to make as a coherent point, it's that you know, there's a lot of things that we can do to give our customers great experience that don't really require a huge amount of customer data. We have to, the store has to be clean, our staff has to be helpful, our systems have to be easy to work with, all those kinds of things that just, I think, again, don't get prioritized enough.
I always say, think like a CEO, and that's That's very much true. I think these data-enabled marketers who have customer instinct, along with many of the attributes we've talked about, is going to be what marketing of the future, or the most successful marketers of the future, will look like. Is you really do think like you were in place of a CEO who is responsible for growth, and as customers are more digitally centered, or were centered around digital, you have the instinct and the information at your disposal. Those types of people who have that instinct are going to win, at least in business and at least in other capabilities as well. So really strategic growth, just thinking that way and having that mindset and being able to lead in that capacity.
Absolutely. So use all the technology at your disposal, but, you know, keep those instincts, those human instincts sharp. So with that said, thank you so much. Gary, thanks for joining us today. It was a really interesting conversation and totally new facet of data-driven marketing that at least I hadn't really known much about before. I'm sure it'll be really useful to our listeners. Thanks for sharing that with us.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure to be here and gaining insight from each of you as well.
Great. And David and Anand, thanks as always for, you know, a great discussion on a really interesting topic. Thanks, listeners, for tuning in today, and we'll see you next week with another special guest.
Thanks for joining us. See you next week with our take on the big news in the MarTech world. Log into MarTechAdvisor.com for more expert commentary on all things MarTech.